It's like old home week today on Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is here. Mary Jo Foley is not. We're going to have a lot of fun talking man stuff, mostly about Windows, a little bit about Windows Phone. You stay here, won't you? Windows Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 255, recorded April 5th, 2012. I miss Narnia. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Go to My PC. Take care of last-minute requests from anywhere, right from your phone, with the Go to My PC app for iPhone. Visit GoToMyPC.com for your free 30-day trial. Use the offer code Windows. And by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com. Use the offer code Windows4. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, visit audible.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly and a look at all the latest from the beautiful city of Redmond, Washington. Normally, we have Mary Jo Foley and Paul Thurrott, but today, Mary Jo is on assignment. That's what they say.
I think you should put me on two screens today.
Yeah, you should have a double screen Paul Thurrott.
Yeah. Paul Thurrott, I'll just debate myself.
No, Paul, you ignorant fool. Paul Thurrott from the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and analyst for Penton Media, and author of Windows Phone Secrets, working on Windows 8 Secrets. Are there secrets in Windows 8?
Oh, yeah, there sure are, including why doesn't this work?
when the Windows Secrets started, or Secrets, way back when.
Yes.
Wasn't it a website? I seem to remember it was a website. Was it Brian Livingston who started it?
I would imagine it was probably his column in InfoWorld.
Maybe that's what it was, yeah. And he would reveal, I mean, there really were secrets. There were like...
Back then there weren't a lot of places to get that information.
Right.
You know, I remember getting the, I want to say it was the Windows for Workgroups resource kit.
Yeah.
It came shrink-wrapped. It was about an inch thick. It was kind of a big 8.5 by 11 thing. And it was crazy what it had, but there was a screwdriver included in it that I still have somewhere here.
A physical screwdriver.
Yeah, a physical screwdriver. This is, I don't know. And there was like a rundown of every kind of command you could have in all those .ini files, which to me was just the most amazing resource ever. So they had like WinINI and SysINI, and there were all these possibilities, and they documented every single one of them. And I just remember thinking like this was black magic, you know? Now we have the internet, so that stuff is useless.
Now we have the internet. And nothing stays secret for very long. And that's really the truth.
Yeah. So we've had to change the format of the book. So we used to call out secrets in the book.
Right.
And the way it works now is...
No one knows this.
Yeah, it's sort of... Well, in the case of Windows 8, there's a lot of new stuff. So I think anything that's new to you is a secret to you. But it's more along the lines of kind of like what's new. You know, in other words, here's something you wouldn't know normally. Not so much like a surprise.
Ah, but you do have the wonderful Gabe Rivera. I'm sorry. Gabe Rivera's tech meme. That's another person.
I wish I had Gabe Rivera.
Rafael Rivera.
Wow. Yeah, he's good too.
You like to give Rafael a hard time. But Rafael Rivera is a very smart kid who is very good at kind of digging deep inside stuff and finding secrets. If there are secrets, Rafael will find them.
He just spelunked one yesterday.
Did
actually,
he?
That's on his blog today.
Oh, that's neat.
It's kind of a, I don't know what you call it. We call it a power user menu, but there's with the WinX menu, you might call it, that kind of menu that comes up where the start button used to be.
Yeah.
And people want to add stuff to it. So there have been some hacks to make that happen. You can edit a DLL file, which is kind of a really low level thing to do, but he figured out a simpler way to do that. So cool. We were playing around with that last night, and this seems to work pretty well. It's nice.
So there are secrets. There are things you can do.
There's always secrets.
There's always something. Steven Sinofsky is going to reveal all. No more secrets from the man in charge of Windows 8. He's writing a book.
Well, actually, this book's been out for a little while.
So there you go.
And actually, to be fair to Mr. Sinofsky, I would say every year publicly. He writes the equivalent of a very long book through all of his blog posts.
Yeah, each blog post, thousands of words.
This book, One Strategy, actually, if you scroll down, tell me if it says when it was published. It must have come out about a year ago or more.
2009, November 23rd, 2009.
So this book is interesting. It's, and this is going to blow
people
away.
It's like a
business
strategy book.
Yeah, so it's awful. I mean, but it's, so, no, but this is crazy. So we know that this man writes incredibly long blog posts publicly, right. Now on the Building Windows 8 blog. Back in those days, there was an equivalent Windows 7 blog where he just like really just documents and over documents and writes and writes and writes. What we don't know is that he does that kind of thing internally as well. So Microsoft has a SharePoint server inside. It's only available to Microsoft employees.
The words.
And every day, this
Steven.
Guy writes a blog post that's many times.
All right. Let me just give you an idea. Here's what is in this book, according to Amazon.
Yeah.
Hard-won insights, experiences, and lessons on, one, aligning a highly complex organization during uncertain times.
Right.
Two, developing a framework for strategic integrity by planning, organization, and decision-making.
By the way, I've made strategic integrity the center of my life. We'll
it's in our mission statement.
Yeah,
it is
our mission statement.
It's translating strategic potential into impact. This is
ridiculous. All right, so but here's the point. Here's what you need to know. The book is actually two different things. That stuff that you just read about, is written by the other guy. My understanding is that Steven Sinofsky.
He's working with Marco Jansanti.
He's
the David Sarnoff Professor of Business Administration at Harvard Business School.
Right, and if his title doesn't put you to sleep, his book will. But I guess they met. You know, Steven Sinofsky took some time off.
This is his blog posts mixed with that.
But his internal blog posts.
This
is why it's interesting. So. In the after Windows 7 shipped, I guess, they published this book. And what this guy did, the other guy, was he took Steven Sinofsky's internal blog posts and then he put commentary around them. So the Steven Sinofsky stuff is just as he wrote it. It's not even really edited in any meaningful way. In fact, that's kind of a problem in some places. But the stuff that the other guy wrote, I couldn't care less about. I just skip over it. I want to go read about Windows and Windows Live and all the stuff that matters. And I'm telling you, if you like Windows and you were looking for some sort of a more modern look at what goes on inside of Microsoft and everything. Those posts are very they're very interesting. It's worth reading just for that stuff. I mean, the book is a little expensive, unfortunately. Even on the Kindle, I think it was about $25 or $26.
Oh.
But there's some interesting stuff in there, and I've only just begun it. But I'll give you two of the ones that jump out at me because they're sort of pet peeves of mine in a way. So, for example. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast. You know, every time Steven Sinofsky writes a blog post, he talks about engineering. Or every time he stands up in front of a crowd, he talks about engineering. It's always engineering, 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 engineering. You know, he's very engineering focused, like almost too much. Like he's trying to either prove himself or prove that the organization he works for is, you know, an engineering enterprise of some kind, you know. And it turns out in the book, this is revealed to be a reaction to Google, that as Google was coming up in the world, say 5 years ago, a lot of people thought that they were this unstoppable, almost scientific force, that Google was going to win through engineering. You know, that Google, everything Google does is like mathematical, you know? It just creates stuff and then it runs in the background, you know? And this is Microsoft's attempt, or Steven Sinofsky's attempt to say, hey, we are an engineering company as well. And he argues in some internal blog post early on before, I think even right at the run-up to Windows 7 before they started, that Microsoft needs to go back to its roots as an engineering company. And God, he's been pushing that publicly ever since. I mean, he talks about engineering all the time. In fact, I believe the Windows 7 blog was called something like Engineering Windows, or, you know, it had that kind of a name. Very interesting. So that was one. The other thing he talked about was Windows Vista, you know, and this is one of those topics we go back to again and again. You know, Vista is a version of Windows that is generally very derided publicly. People always kind of laugh at it and go back to it and, you know, oh, yeah, or, you know, but what if Windows 8 is another Vista, you know? Yeah, what if Windows 8 is another Vista? They'll only sell several hundred million copies of it, you know? The thing that I've said all along, and it's very interesting to see it repeated in some of Sinofsky's writings, is this thing sold really well. And was an important thing that Microsoft had to do. The odd thing about it is, and he mentions this, I think in the context of an internal discussion at Microsoft, Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, as Vista was finally coming to market, which was after Sinofsky took over the Windows team and was now working on that next Windows version, publicly said that they would never allow another Vista to happen. But that was misquoted by people as, in other words, saying, we're not going to make this mistake again. We're not going to do this kind of a big bet again. You know, we're not going to make this thing, you know, this kind of thing. That's not what he was saying. What he was really saying was, we're not going to let 5 years go by without a new version of Windows. And one of the things that Steven Sinofsky has been very adamant about, it seems, is keeping Windows in a very regular, predictable cycle. So Windows 7 happened in 3 years. Windows 8 will happen in 3 years. You know, it's something he was able to do with Office and now is doing with Windows, making it not unpredictable like it was with Vista, but predictable. It wasn't so much like reversing, like, we're going to fix all the wrongs of Vista. I mean, from their perspective, it was like, you know, we got a lot of stuff right here. And it was an important foundation that made Windows 7 possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm just, you know, during Microsoft's antitrust days, there were a lot of books written about Microsoft. So that was kind of a fertile time period for that.
A ton of them, yeah.
As Google came up in the world, through a bunch of Google books.
Lots of Google books, yeah.
A bunch of Apple books, you know, obviously with Steve Jobs and the incredible resurgence at Apple, a lot of books about that. But, you know, in recent years, there really haven't been many or any decent books written about Microsoft this past decade, this past several years. And this doesn't completely fulfill that, but it's in the same way that, say, the Steve Jobs biography was very interesting for details about Apple and Steve Jobs in the last couple of years, this book is interesting because it gives us some details about Microsoft in a very recent time period internally, which I'd have to say I've not really seen a lot of elsewhere. You know, so we know about Microsoft, you know, XP and beyond going back in time. More recently, haven't been as many books. And so this it's just kind of interesting historically for that reason. You know, the economic stuff and, you know, how you can build a team and, you know, blah, 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 whatever. It's not clear to me that anyone can learn any business lessons from this. And maybe you can. I don't really care, but I'm not going to read that stuff. But I'm really interested about the background Microsoft stuff.
Yeah. No, you're not alone. We've talked about Showstopper before, and I've always found that stuff fascinating.
How nice would it be to have a Showstopper type book?
Yeah, for seven, for Vista?
Every 5 years or whatever,
eight?
You know?
Yeah.
Right. I love stuff like that. And it just doesn't happen. You know, those kind of things, unfortunately, not so much once in a lifetime, but they, you know, they're rare. They don't happen that much.
Yeah. That's the show. For people who don't know Showstopper, it's still in print. It's we've talked about it before. G. Pascal Zachary's book about the development of, was it NT 3.5 or 3?
Well, the first version of NT. 3.1 was the first.
3.1. Okay.
The development of NT.
Right. Mm-hmm. Fascinating book.
Yep.
It's no one strategy, but it's a good book.
No, it's not.
No, what is?
I don't like those kind of books. You know, there was a, let's see if I can get this right. It was a book about the ThinkPad that was written like this, where there's every chapter has a chapter, you know, about some time period or product or whatever it was. You know, remember they made that butterfly keyboard or whatever. And then at the end, you know, these economists that wrote the book or whatever, or educators or whoever they were, wrote this sort of, you know, it was almost like a term paper about the event after the fact. And it's like, oh, guys, just tell the story. I mean, like, this other stuff is just, it's just filler, you know.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, yeah. It's I guess in the long run, what happens is you could piece the whole story together from a variety of sources, and this might be one source. I mean, at least we're seeing the internal blog posts, which we wouldn't have seen otherwise, I guess.
Yeah, and I'm sure all kinds of things were redacted. It would have been hilarious
if they did,
like, a government document with, like, the actual blackouts. But
I'm sure the good stuff is taken out.
It's still, I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, I find that stuff to be very interesting.
Me too. Maybe this a little less than most, but I'm sure. I'm gonna pick it up today. Windows. Actually, before we get to Windows 8, I want to take a little break. We were talking with Paul Thrott. Mary Jo is, I think, traveling. I
think so.
Yeah,
I think so.
She'll be back next week. Meanwhile, the show, as always, brought to you by our great friends at GoToMyPC. The folks at Citrix do such good software, and GoToMyPC is amazing. Now, this is a tough crowd for something like GoToMyPC because, of course, Windows has built-in remote access, and I'm sure many of you use it. And you might be saying, well, why do I need to go to my PC? It'd be interesting to know if you read, for instance, Showstopper, you'll see the name Ed Iacobucci throughout. Ed worked at IBM at the time, but was lent to Redmond to work on the NT kernel. And it was there that he really got some expertise in NT and, in fact, went off to start Citrix. Citrix became known quite well for their remote access. And if you use RDP, you're using Citrix code. And Citrix, of course, is used in enterprise, the full bore Citrix, all the time for remote access. It's a better, secure remote access. Has a lot of advantages over something like RDP. First of all, you don't have to open ports. It uses something called NAT traversal to get to where it's going, which is great. You just log on to the GoToMyPC server with your secure credentials, and you're connected to your office computer. It's also really fast. They have a lot of proprietary technology for, you know, only sending delta changes and things like that. So it's very, very snappy. 128-bit SSL from everywhere, so you don't have to worry about using it at a coffee shop. In fact, I know a lot of people use it as a VPN. You log in with GoToMyPC to your office computer, and then you surf, even if you're at an insecure access point, your surfing's completely secure right to your office. You could try it free for 30 days by visiting gotomypc.com. Notice, though, it doesn't just work with a PC. It works with Macs. It works with iPads. It works with iPhone, and that's the weirdest way to use it, but it's incredible to have your office computer in your pocket on your iPhone. Anything you could do at work, you could do on your iPhone. I mean, send, receive email, run any program, access any network resource, update spreadsheets, edit PowerPoints, work on a file right on your iPhone. It's kind of weird. I want you to try it right now. Go to mypc.com, click the Try It Free button. You don't need help from the IT department. You can do it for 30 days. The iPad and iPhone apps are absolutely free. And so is this trial for the first 30 days. Go to mypc.com, click the Try It Free button, use the offer code. I didn't mention this. I would appreciate it if you would. Use the offer code Windows so that Paul gets credit. Offer code Windows at gotomypc.com. Windows 8, Paul Thrott. Any more news? We're getting, you know, people are using it. I have to say, the reaction seems to be, even from people who are kind of cynical about Windows, that it's good.
Imagine that.
There's a certain amount of surprise to the whole thing.
I think the problem with Windows 8 is that it's not... A lot of the new stuff is not inherently discoverable, right? It's not clear that you can go to the corners and make things happen.
Right.
It's not clear that,
right.
You know. And so I'm curious to see how in the final version Microsoft will educate people about those things.
Okay, yeah, I had to get you. You know, I had Paul Thurrott helping me.
Yeah.
And that
right.
made it,
and
I'm
available to anyone.
Thank you. Call him
fashion,
up. So. He will tell you about all these cool things that are just, you're right. They're kind of hidden things that are, you know, make it a huge difference.
Yeah, so people like me are going to be busy for months to come.
Yes, well, that's good news.
That's good.
Yeah.
I think there's some weirdness around the dual UIs, of course, right? We've got Metro, we've got desktop. They don't really interact in any meaningful way other than, you know, certain things pop up over the desktop that are Metro-based, like notifications and the Edge UIs and so forth. I don't know. You know, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think the basic way to put it is, We have this new computing environment that's coming that, you know, Apple was on the forefront of with the iPad, and, you know, Microsoft's response wasn't to copy them for a change. And frankly, I think after Zune and all the other failed attempts at copying other people, you know, Microsoft should be applauded for doing something different like they did with Windows Phone. And, you know, we'll see how it does in the market, but it is at least a different approach. And I think it's one that will have some value to people, i.e. that notion that you could have one device that does everything, you know. When you take it out with you in your bag and you're on a plane or you're out commuting or whatever, it's a tablet. You touch it, and it's got a nice UI for that kind of stuff. It's like a consumption device. But you can plug it into a dock, keyboard, mouse, big screen, and it's a productivity machine. It's a PC. It has all the expandability and all that stuff, you know, that the iPad doesn't have. So, you know, there's some advantage to that. It's not I'm not claiming this is a clear win. You know, it's an alternative. And I think the future of... computing is going to be much bigger than was the PC market and much more diverse. And, you know, hopefully Windows will be part of that. But This is their approach. So this is what we have to deal with. I mean, this is what we're working with. Yeah, so there are some changes coming. I think a lot of people expected, because of the way things had gone in the past, that the beta version, or what they're calling the consumer preview, would have been feature complete, but it's not. And hopefully the release candidate will be, that it will be a true release candidate, you know, something that could be considered for the final version, but at least be feature complete. So there are some changes that are coming. I'm aware of some of them. I know that there are new icons and cursors and all the little on-screen controls, scroll bars and all that stuff. Excuse me, I'm sorry. I had a horrible cold this week.
Sorry about that.
Once my throat gets itchy, it's hard to.
I know, you can't stop. Have a nice sip of beer.
Yes.
There you go. Mm. Oh, vodka. That's good.
It just coats the throat. But, yeah, there's a Chinese website. I think it's Win8China or something of that, something along those lines, that has been very good about leaking stuff. And they have a shot of the Explorer version that's going to be in the RC. It's not dramatically different, but it is flatter and more Metro-like. I apologize. Hold on 1 second.
While Paul's coughing his lungs out, we'll take this time to observe that the new Lumia 900 is out, and we will have a review. Our Windows Phone expert, Alex Gumpel, will be reviewing it this evening on Before You Buy. He actually, I got the phone. AT&T sent it to us and said, you can't talk about it till Tuesday night. But we got the phone a few days early, and I was playing with it, and I loved it, but I thought, I can't do this. I have to let Alex play with his phone. Because he's the one person in the building who actually uses a Windows phone, like, as his main phone. And he says, I wish I weren't stuck on Verizon, because I love this phone. Paul, we need some. You need some salmon with honey. No, I'm sorry, bourbon. I misread it.
Salmon with honey. I'm listening. It's a little fishy.
How are you? Better? Are you feeling better?
I guess so. I don't know what's going on. Oh, so,
all right.
Anyway,
we got a man down in Dedham.
I'm feeling better today too. But
it's like Call of Duty Zombies. He's like on his back, going, "Help me! Help me! Quick, somebody run over." Rejuvenate him.
I'm not dead yet.
Me.
Okay. But anyway, you know, there have been a lot of calls in the enthusiast community for Microsoft to completely overhaul Explorer and give desktop users, you know, throw them a bone, do something nice for them. They're not going to do that. And the reason is simple. If you're going to have Windows 8 and Windows 7 together in an enterprise, they can't be completely different. I'm sorry. I can't shake this thing.
Do you want me to do it? I'll do a commercial while you go stand on your head in the corner. What is it that people do when they have a coughing fit? Take your time. Paul Thurrott's going to leave us now. Finally, my own show! I've been waiting for years for this. Actually, let's talk about Squarespace.com, the secret behind exceptional websites. The new Squarespace is looking so sweet. And, you know, they've lowered the cost of Squarespace.com. I want you to take a look. This is the site we use for our Inside Twit blog, mainly because we send people there all the time and we don't want it to go down. And I'll tell you what, you cannot bring down a Squarespace site. This Squarespace is, let me explain what it is. It's hosting plus content management software all rolled into one. And one of the reasons it's nice to have the two combined is because they're tightly integrated. So it's not like you're laying WordPress on top of some lamp stack. This is that, and that's one of the reasons you can't bring a Squarespace site, a space site down. They're using a virtual server technology that is so sophisticated. And they've got this great user interface for creating and managing websites or blogs. What's nice is it's optimized both for beginners and experts. If you're a CSS expert, you'll love the new CSS editor for developers. You pop out the window in full screen. You colorize code, undo, find, and replace. I mean, it's a full, you know, IDE for CSS. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry. You don't need to know it, because they've also got literally hundreds of design templates to choose from. You can customize any of the designs with point and click. You don't need to know any code. They've got 13 new template redesigns now, just came out, 85 new style options, two brand new templates. They've added the Google font library, 300 fonts, fully integrated. iPhone, iPad, and Android apps. These are beautiful. I got to show you these that really make it easy, not merely to post content, but also to moderate blog comments, to look at stats. It's just fantastic. This is the platform. And so, you know, if you're using another program, I'm not going to name names, but security becomes a big concern. The nice thing about having Squarespace host your site is they keep the software secure and up to date automatically. It's a managed server. You never have to worry about security. Plus, great resources and a support team to give you help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Have I showed you the workshops? Go to workshops.squarespace.com. They have live workshops, webinars that you can go to in every area of a Squarespace development. Getting started, beyond the blog, search engine optimization, custom domain mapping. Their members and audiences feature, which is an interesting feature. It allows you to create individual accounts for various members of your site. So it's a great way to have kind of a paid section. 30-minute seminars coming up. You register for that, you go, and you learn. And it's all free. These guys are committed to making your site a success. They've got a blog module, which includes import and export for WordPress, Blogger, Movable Type, and Typepad. They've got a form builder, so you can collect email addresses and other information from site visitors. Widgets for Flickr, for Twitter, for Facebook, Google Maps, and a whole lot more. It is amazing. Now, here's the deal. There's no special URL or anything. Just go to squarespace.com. This is one of the most generous offers anybody offers. You just go there, click the try it free button. You fill out first name, last name, email. Give your site a name and a password. You can uncheck Stay in Touch. You won't get any email from them, and create your site. Now, for 2 weeks, you've got full access to everything Squarespace offers. Everything Squarespace offers is there. If you decide you like it, go back to squarespace.com, and you'll see we've got new pricing. And I just want to point this out. If you've looked at it before, they've completely simplified it. $8 or $16 a month. There you go. Boom. I think they might have some other plans. But $8 a month, this is the new $8 a month if you build annually. That's a great deal because you get all the core features. You can have a 20-page site, 500 gigabytes a month of bandwidth, 2 gigabytes of storage. And this isn't, you know, some cheapo hosting company. This is the best. I got a better deal for you. If you decide to buy, use our offer code, and you get 10% off the first month. That's 10% on monthly plans. If you get an annual plan, it's 10% off that. That's a good deal. Squarespace.com. The offer code, if you decide to buy, is Windows 4, W-I-N-D-O-W-S, and the number 4. I love Squarespace. I know you will, too. And every time I do this ad, I feel bad for Paul Theroux because he's stuck with a CMS that's not, somewhat less.
Every time I do this ad, I think about the choices I've made in life. Somewhat. I've gone awry.
You know, your site, though, is pretty robust, right? It doesn't go down much, does it?
That's hilarious.
Oh, it's okay. Never mind. Sorry I brought it up. You feeling better?
I don't know.
Did you get some honey and salmon?
No, we don't have any salmon.
I'm sorry, bourbon. I have some bourbon here for you if you'd like. You know, I think you warm it up, you put a little honey and lemon in there, and it coats the throat, and you're so drunk you don't really care.
Yeah, I need that.
Explorer is getting an all-new UI.
Isn't
getting an all-new. I just wanted to tease people. No, I like that. You know, we're talking about the tile thing, right? Or is that what we're talking
no,
about?
No, we're talking about the old one, the desktop.
File Explorer.
Windows Explorer. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So there is, if you're using Windows 8, there is a button that says Windows Explorer. It opens the desktop and gives you exactly what you would get in Windows 7. It's got libraries. It's got folders. I mean, I think in some ways that reassures people. Tell me that they're not going to...
No, they're just going to flatten it out a little bit.
They're going to metroize it.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to even explain. If you expand the ribbon there and you look at, you know, where you have tabs and so forth.
Yeah.
No, down a little bit. Just click.
Expand the ribbon.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
They're just going to flatten it out a little bit.
Flatten the ribbon.
Right now, it's just sort of, it's not 3D, but, you know, there's a little bit of a sense of depth there.
As the world goes 3D, Microsoft's going flat. It's interesting. Right. But
give them credit again, doing a different direction.
You got to think, though, that there's a ton of thought that goes into something like this, right? That they have, like... I'm giving them a lot of credit here.
I'm sorry. Don't laugh. Ludicrous. One would think that...
They have a guy in there who is like some sort of,
he's like a part-time contractor.
He's a savant. And he's like a gypsy. He feels as the new... As
I agree that
look.
He's like a gypsy. In fact, I think what they're going to discover after Windows 8 ships that, like, did that guy even work here?
No, I'm trying to give him credit. So that he says, purple, it's the new black. Or, 2D is the new 3D. Make it so.
I don't follow the movie industry or whatever, but if I'm not mistaken, a silent movie was just the most lauded movie of the year.
That baffled me. Not only a silent movie, it was 4:3 aspect ratio.
And in French.
And it won Best Picture and Best Actor.
I think we've just described the three strikes that we all assume are against it. And yet. There it is.
Well, it's really funny. If you made that pitch, you went to Hollywood and you say, I want to do a movie. I'm French. But to avoid the language problems, there will be no dialogue.
The star of the movie previously starred in James Bond spoofs in French. What do you think?
He's the guy who's in your favorite... Yeah.
OSS 117. So this is when the Mr. Burns like hole in the floor opens up and the guy falls through the floor.
Feed them to the dogs, Smithers. Yeah. A silent movie.
Yep.
In black and white. 4:3, not 16:9. There's all, I went to a theater. The theaters now all have wide screens. It's an amazing thing. And there's black bars on both sides because they're not using the whole screen. It's a very strange experience to see that movie. I finally saw it. And I was kind of baffled, to be honest. I love him. Yeah. He's great.
Yeah, me too.
And he's great in OSS 117. Anyway, how did we get there? Oh, 2D.
I don't know.
So maybe Microsoft is right. Maybe this is it. This is the future.
This is the crazy or crazy like a fox.
Exactly.
No, I mean, I think they can't go too nuts with Explorer because, for the same old reasons as before. But, some updates. This is nice for me because I've only taken like 500 screenshots for the book, so I can just retake them all later. That'll be fun.
Oh, God, that's right. That to you to drive you crazy?
I already talked to the publishing company about this, that everything we've done is just like a placeholder. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Paul doesn't mind. Screenshots are easy.
I expect this.
You know you're going to have more. Although, didn't they say this wasn't going to happen? Kind of?
Yeah. Well, obviously in a book like the one we're working on, most of it is the Metro stuff.
Right, right. So that's all right.
But, that's changing too. I mean, a lot of the apps that are in Windows 8 right now are app previews. They're not complete. Some of them are terrible. I mean, I've been sort of going through them one a day on my website. I wrote about the music app today. I mean, this thing is like, did you give this to the sick child down there in the corner? Right now? I mean, it's like the most awful.
Oh,
like,
dear.
You have these guys who did Zune. You had these guys who did Windows Media Center and Windows Media Player. And you apparently decided to ignore all of them and make this piece of crap.
Metro is very good.
I think the way to put it would be Metro can be very good. But, I'm sorry, now that I'm off on this tangent. The music app, aside from being navigationally retarded, has... three sections right in the beginning, which I can't get to now because it's broken. So I actually have to crash the app to see what I'm talking about. But there's a marketplace, like a spotlight section, right? This is the first thing you see when you go in the app. So they're already involved in commerce the second you get into this thing. All I want to do is listen to some of my own music, and I have to scroll by commerce. And then there's the section that has your music. And then you scroll by that, and there's another section for marketplace that's just the general marketplace interface. So the way they've decided to make the UI is to sandwich your content like in between this junk that they're trying to sell you, And you see it all, it's all in the same interface. It's just awful. It's reprehensible. It's really bad. So, yeah, Metro can be good, but Metro can also be used for evil, and I think music is a good example. The music app is a good example of that. I feel like I've lost you.
I'm sorry. I just passed out for a moment. I was trying that bourbon and honey thing, and it works. So we got the, can I move to the topic that I really want to talk about?
Yes, please.
This is a great phone. Can I say that?
You can say that.
How do you feel? You've been using it probably for a couple of weeks.
I do not have one.
What?
So I foolishly decided to go through Microsoft to get this one, and now the Microsoft phones are going to be late.
We got it from AT&T.
And the reviewer, most of the reviewers probably got them from Nokia directly. That was an avenue that was actually open to me. So no, I still don't have one, but it's okay. I mean, I'm getting one. It's okay. It's fine.
You know how it is. You know it's going to be good.
I mean, I think the important bit for me is just that I've been using a large screen Windows Phone device, you know, since
the Titan?
October. No, I've been using the Samsung Focus S.
Yes. I have. That's the one I have. I love that.
Yeah. Love it.
This is even bigger, though.
Yeah. And it's got a nicer body. I think it's, you know, you've got the color choices and all that kind of stuff.
There's something about this. This is the cyan. They also have a black and the white one's coming.
And there'll be a white one coming up.
But there's something about this. It just feels really good in the hand.
The thing that I would want to test the most on that is I will compare it to the iPhone 4S from a photo taking capability. I suspect it's not quite as good. I mean, the iPhone 4S is a high watermark for that kind of
thing. It's pretty tough
But I bet it's pretty good.
I'm looking at these pictures, and I would say in terms of the richness of the color, it's perhaps even better. I mean, it's just beautiful.
Go back to that picture of Alex. This photo is titled, "This is the last thing you'll ever see." It's like, is there somebody there?
I don't know why he did that, actually. It's just his head floating in darkness.
I swear to God, if I saw that in the darkness,
scary.
I would pee myself.
Yeah. That's probably his new avatar. Why'd you do that, Alex? Yeah, he's saying something.
he's saying something.
Say again?
It's not creepy. No.
He was testing. This is the front-facing camera. Okay. Now, you were doing it in an unlit space, though, I should point out. I think that, I mean, this is a pretty good close-up. I think the detail is excellent.
But you have to test it next to an iPhone.
You have to put the same picture on. Yeah, exactly.
You want to take a bunch of the same photos, you know, zoom in and out and do all that stuff.
I think one thing you can say is Nokia is famous for its cameras. It is a Zeiss lens. Yep. It's 2.2. So it's, f2.2, which means very low light. That's comparable to the iPhone. I'm looking at the color rendition. It looks good. I think the clarity may be slightly lower than the iPhone. But I will do a side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go. But, you know, not that that's how people decide, but I think that's going to be one of a couple of key areas where, you know, that would make a difference. I mean, I think the big story that I've seen in the review so far that it actually sort of bothers me is about the apps. You know, Microsoft hit 80,000 apps for Windows Phone this week.
That's kind of surprising. That's amazing, in fact. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, this is the one obvious complaint that people can still say. You know, there are hundreds of thousands of apps for the iPhone.
It's not numbers to me. I mean, I'm sympathetic with this argument that it needs that the apps are what is going to keep me from using it. But it's not.
Yeah.
It's not so much for me that it has fewer apps in toto. Nobody, who cares? That's a dumb number. Does it have the apps you want? Does it have Angry Birds? Does it have Evernote? Does it have Netflix?
Yeah.
Is there a good third party calendar or, you know, where you get on the iPhone some advantages is there's so many apps that you have a number of choices for third party versions of the browser and things like
you
that.
You do, but there's a confusion to that. You know, like saying, you know, it's not always better to have 117 different Italian dressing choices in a supermarket. I mean, sometimes it's not clear. Not that that means that the lower number of choices in the Windows Phone marketplace guarantees quality. You know,
in fact, there's some crappy apps, but
of course, right. Of course,
but that's true everywhere. I mean, there are fewer fart apps, I admit.
Well, but you know, I know I have different needs, I think, than some people when it comes to apps. But it's a little, it bothers me a bit when I read a review where someone will say something like, well, there's no Pandora app and I need Pandora. Well, actually, there is a there are a couple of Pandora apps. They're not made by Pandora, right? They're made by other people, but they work fine. And in fact, I use one of them. They don't have every single Angry Birds game. They only have the first one. Right. You know, the new one is apparently coming at some point. Whatever. Okay, fine. I get that stuff, but I've used the iPhone 4S fairly frequently now, not as much as before. I use the Windows Phone every day. I still prefer it by a wide margin, and I just like the way it works. And I think when you accompany that system by a device like this that's beautiful to look at and beautiful to hold and takes great pictures, hopefully, that's the complete package, you know, for a lot of people, and I think what people are looking for.
It's going to come down to, I think, people saying, well, maybe not. Well, for somebody like me, it's going to come down to, does it have the apps I need? But I think for a new buyer, that's not the that's not the calculus they're going to make.
I would hope not. Because I don't think people even understand what they need, you know?
Right.
And I think there's a, I don't want to call it, it's not so much lock-in as it is kind of a mind lock-in where you just get used to doing things a certain way or using certain apps. And if it's not exactly the same on this other phone, well, I can't use it, you know? And it's right. Like, well, but there are alternatives, you know? iPhone has a huge advantage in, with the ecosystem stuff. And I don't just mean services. I mean all of the hardware doodads you can get, the speaker docks and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's some niceties there, absolutely. But I don't know. I there's no standardization on the Android side with regards to hardware, so that stuff is not an advantage on that side. And I just think these devices are great. I'm confused why they're not more popular, and I hope that this device.
This will be the one. This will be the one.
I hope so.
I think in every respect, they've got parity. In some respects, they've got an advantage. The screen is a good size, which I really like.
It's LTE.
It's LTE. The fit and finish and feel is just excellent on this thing.
It looks nice and glossy and fingerprinty.
Yeah, I gotta shine it up a little bit. But that's standard, right? You gotta have that. Yeah, I love how it looks. I think even the cyan looks pretty good.
The camera placement is a little strange to me. It's in the middle, but it's also a little further down from
that's
the top.
That's a Nokia thing. They do that. That's where Nokia puts their cameras.
Holding that thing normally as you would to take pictures, is that a problem?
No, in fact, it's better because what I find on a lot of phones, because the cameras are almost always in the corner.
Yeah,
it's very easy if you hold it wrong to put your finger over it. I almost always have to move the phone around, so this is going to be a little harder to get your finger in the way.
Gotcha.
Of course, cases will have to be designed and everything. The thing that's the best about Windows Phone is it has a dedicated hardware camera button, and even in lock mode, you press that, it goes right to the phone and a camera and takes a picture. And that is I think that is a significant advantage.
I know, it's crazy. It's like a single button, but it's a big deal. Yep.
No, I love that. And I think the hardware camera button. Now, admittedly, there's no labeling. And this is a little confusing for me. You get used to it.
Yeah.
But there are four buttons on the side with no labels. I mean, you figure out pretty quickly that's volume up and down, the two together. The middle one's on, off, and then that's the camera button. But the fact that there's not even an icon.
And they're all on the same side. That's a little unusual.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the other side would have the volume rocker.
Right.
And the other stuff would be on that side.
But, you know, I don't know if you can tell, but, I mean, it's a great screen, and very snappy. You know, anybody who says, well, it's, you know, single-core processor, your computer.
Anyone who talks like that has no idea what they're talking
about. It's not an issue. It's plenty. Oh, let's not show phone numbers. It's plenty of speed on this thing.
There are motorcycles that are faster than cars, and they have smaller engines.
Yeah, there you go.
It's not really how it works.
The truth is, multitasking on a phone is a misnomer. It's not really something you want.
This does
what it needs to do. It does.
Hold down that back button. You'll get the multitasking interface.
Yeah. So these are all the things running in the background. I think that's a very nicely done. By the way.
Yeah.
That's that reminds me of the thing I like the most about the about WebOS was that card key thing. That's good. I did not know about that, actually. I got to read your book. I will have no hesitation to recommend this. The problem is, again, it is apps. It's solely apps. It's not the number of apps. It's that people are going to say, Well, I hear about this Instagram thing. I'd like to use it.
There are Instagram alternatives, someone has found.
There are alternatives.
Well, Instagram just came out like yesterday
for Android.
I mean, it's
right.
not like, you know, but I, sure, fair enough. I mean, if you want
that's
to
what's
engage
the, I'm
in,
not, I'm not, that's an example. There for some people, there will be that app, right?
Yep, of course.
And that's the only reason I could think of that you would say, oh, I'm not going to get that phone. Because in every other respect, its hardware is superb. The speed of it, the operation of it, I think the Metro UI is very straightforward, easy to use. I love it that it's something different, that it's not a grid of icons like everybody else.
Though it is a grid of sorts, isn't it?
Well,
but
yeah,
it's a grid of smart tiles. It's yeah, in other
kinda,
words, they're,
I like the tile, and this is what actually
live, yeah,
has kind of won me over on Windows 8. Is I kind of. I actually, you know, you're going to think
well,
this is funny.
It depends on how you do it. It depends on how you can configure it.
We told, yeah, we're designing the webpage for the radio show, and I told the designers, yep, I kind of like in a Metro, the front page should be a little Metro. And I thought, I'm in real trouble here, because these guys, I'm sure, are all Mac guys. But
they
I
probably
think
misunderstood you, and we'll turn it into some kind of metrosexual nightmare thing.
No, I like the flat, simple tiles is actually a real, because what happens is, This is what I grokked that I really like about it, and I like it in Windows 8 too. Instead of giving you a list of messages or a list of contacts, it gives you one, it says there's a message, here's a contact, here's a picture. You know now if I drill down on that tile, that picture is going to go to a list of pictures. That's, you know, it's exactly what you want, I think.
Yeah.
I love these active tiles. I think that they did a good job in 7.5 of making them more active.
There are these weird little efficiencies built into Windows Phone that are kind of hard to communicate, but when I find myself missing them when I use other phones.
I think, truthfully, that happens with every phone, that every phone you kind of learn the pathways and you get used to it. And that, frankly, is why it's tough for Windows Phone, because the pathways have been learned. The iPhone's been out for 5 years.
Yeah, so in other words, by doing the right thing and not just making an abject copy of the popular phone, they've kind of done the wrong thing, because now people don't want to
they
switch
have to relearn. Yep.
But yeah, I still think they did the right thing. So
I did too. Happens. Now pricing is aggressive here.
Yeah,
$100, and I'm seeing it for $50 in some places, yep, like Walmart.
Yep.
They have the unlocked version is also fairly inexpensive. It's less than an unlocked iPhone or Android phone.
Yes.
So I think that that's probably what I'll get is an unlocked version of it.
It's also sold out, so if you try to pre-order it now, it's just not available.
That's kind of too bad, but I'm going to hold out for the white. Well, I like the cyan a lot.
I did too.
It's really pretty. Yeah. It's also distinctive.
I wish I had more, though. You know, don't you wish there was a red one?
Yeah. And, oh, this would be great in red.
Yeah. I don't know why they don't have different colors like that.
Well, Alex Gumpel, who is really, truly the guy at Twit who knows when, besides Paul, who knows Windows Phone best, is going to review this tonight on Before You Buy.
Nice.
Yeah, I decided he should review it since he is the expert. They have some new ads mocking the iPhone.
Yeah, have you seen these things?
No, let me see if I can find them.
Oh, I should have linked to them.
They're Nokia ads?
Yeah, let's see.
I'm sure if I Google Nokia mocks the iPhone, actually even better, if I Bing Nokia mocks the iPhone, it should just pop right up. It should just give me that result. And indeed.
Well, there is a website you can go to.
Yeah, here it is. Let's see. Like,
yeah, smartphonebetatest.com, I think.
Oh, so these are not TV ads?
No, actually, they are on TV.
Typing smartphonebetatest.com
in. That is smartphone.
It's almost over. 1 day, 4 hours remaining. What are they doing here?
It's unclear. But the three boxes below.
He's just sitting here. Oh, this is that guy. This is Specimen.
Dirty Rock. Doctor,
yeah,
SNL.
Dr. Specimen.
Yeah, he's also an archer. But
he's just going to sit there for hours?
Yes. The three boxes below are the three ads.
Wait a minute. I just want to watch him for a while. I've always liked this guy.
Yeah.
Dr. Specimen. All right. Exhibit A, Death Grip. Yeah, this is the TV ad for, and it looks like it's, now I have to narrate because a lot of people listen in audio, and so I'm going to narrate a little bit, I apologize, but you can go to smartphonebetatest.com if you don't want to hear
it.
If
you ever thought that maybe your smartphone wasn't all that it was cracked up to be, that's because it wasn't. In this recently obtained, never-before-seen footage, we go behind the scenes to get the rest of the story.
So it's like a blurred out iPhone.
Guys, am I crazy or did all the signal bars just go away? That's because you're holding it wrong.
That is user error.
Okay, well, how am I supposed to hold it?
Not like that.
Shouldn't I just be able to hold it however I want?
Stop acting like a spoiled child and use the approved grip.
Look, don't
hold it like that.
I have to admit, Apple really opened itself up to that one.
Oh, yeah.
Put the phone down.
But I want to know how to hold it.
Don't make me fire you.
Fire him.
Smartphonebetatest.com.
Okay, so that was like a camera watching.
If you ever thought,
an office. Here's another one. Let's see. We'll go to outside. This is Exhibit B. Again, it's a blurred out security cam. Two guys sitting in a cubicle with.
If you ever thought that maybe your smartphone wasn't all that it was cracked up to be, that's because it wasn't. In this recently obtained, never before seen footage, we go behind the scenes to get the rest of the story.
You know, guys, I think we have a problem. Ooh, everybody quiet.
2007.
He's thinking. I was using this thing outside, and the screen really washes out in the sun. It's hard to see.
So don't go outside.
See? We have a workaround. What's the problem?
I like the workaround. It's smart.
But people do go outside, often in daylight.
You know, 2/3 of the Earth's surface is covered in water. Maybe we should give the phone a life raft.
In the unlikely event of a water landing, Gary is still an idiot. Hey. That's kind of
poor Gary.
I think it's fair.
It's completely fair.
The hipsters are mocking him.
People can just stay inside.
Interesting. A little annoying in production value. I'm kind of annoyed by this camera going bzz, 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 but I guess that's the theme. This one's, should I play one more? This is called
Why not?
Fragile. it's a special award. Let's see.
If you ever thought that maybe your smartphone wasn't all that it was cracked up to be, that's because it wasn't. In this recently obtained, never-before-seen footage, we go behind the scenes to get the rest of the story.
Durability. We know it's an issue. What can we do about it?
Jeez, why are you being such a baby?
I just think the phone is fragile.
Oh, poor baby. You know who's fragile? You are.
Yeah, you're hurting the baby's feelings.
Guys, I'm trying to make a point here.
Here's the thing. Say someone drops the phone and it breaks. Bingo, we just sold another phone.
That's a win-win.
Oh, you this is supposed to be Apple.
Mortgage-backed securities. I'm telling you, get in now.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I got a buddy at Lehman. Sick golfer.
I get it. These are at Apple people talking about
while they're
phone.
Designing whatever version of the iPhone. Yeah.
So, this is their version of Switch, right? They don't name Apple, but it's pretty clear that they're talking about the death grip.
Well,
I
think what they're doing is hitting on some of the key complaints. You know,
I don't have trouble looking at the iPhone outside. Is it less visible outside than the other phones? I didn't really notice that.
I have an AMOLED.
AMOLED looks good outside.
Windows phone that actually I can never see outside, so I'm not really sure.
It may not be the best attack point, but okay. I agree on the grip. That's smart. And fragile for sure. Now, I think any phone with a giant glass face is somewhat fragile. So
how about a phone with a giant glass back, too?
The glass back probably was a mistake.
A little unnecessary.
But the glass face is still going to be fragile, so I don't know. Yeah, and these are Nokia, not Microsoft.
Right.
So that's good. Microsoft's getting some help from the manufacturer.
Yeah, it's about time.
I like it. Yeah, I can't remember Samsung doing any Windows phone ads.
Samsung probably makes a little too much money selling Android phones to bother with
that. Quite a few Android ads.
Yep.
We all thought this was an April Fool's story on the Windows Super site. Internet Explorer usage share up.
You know, I got a couple of comments to that end, but this is actually the fourth month in a row it's been up, so I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Or a third month, I should say. But yeah, so, you know, Internet Explorer, I mean, every month NetApplications comes out with its data for website usage. Every month, every tech blog on Earth, you know, pulls out their boilerplate article for IE falls yet again, you know, but it hasn't been true all year, so... it's kind of interesting. It's not like it's jumped up some huge amount, but it kind of leveled off, and then it's actually been growing. And by the way, growing at the expense of Firefox and Chrome, which have actually fallen in the last month. So, you know, I don't think IE is poised for any mammoth comeback per se.
Right.
But I think this is the natural way of things. And when you think about markets that are going to become more heterogeneous, This might be a good model for what the PC industry, or maybe I should call it the computing industry, is going to look like a few years down the road, right? Where this one thing used to be really dominant, but now there are other choices, and things kind of level off, you know? Not necessarily the way this has, where IE has about 50% of the market and the other two guys, you know, split up the rest of it. But I do think that this kind of a three-way race is an interesting model for what the future of computing could look like as well, generally speaking. So that maybe Windows, iOS, and Android, through whatever percentages, will, you know, split that market up, that, you know, general-purpose computing market of the future. So I think it's interesting to watch this market, if just for that reason, because I think this is a template, you know, for maybe what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah. I hope we get some competition.
Well,
I'm in the wine country.
Yeah.
Bear with me. This is going to all make sense. I'm in the wine
country. This is like a Jonathan Quill Higgins story. I remember back in, you know, New Guinea, 1952.
And one of the problems with having everything, every hillside, every field in this area planted with grapes is a monoculture. Yep. And so it's very easy for one disease to wipe it out. And I think from a security point of view, from a competition point of view and so forth, having three strong browsers, Chrome, Firefox, and IE, is not a – well, make it four if you include Safari – is not a bad thing. I hate to see one browser dominant.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing. And I think that's going to be true for, you know, computing devices, mobile devices, whatever. I mean, it is healthier.
Same thing for phones. And, we don't want just one thing.
No, we really don't. And you know, at least in Microsoft's place, we can look back and see what happens when they are dominant. You know, they do things like IE6.
Exactly.
And we don't need a repeat of
that. So it's good that they've had to struggle and make IE9 as good as it is, IE10 as good as it is, I think.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, as IE has fallen over the years, I mean, you see what they're doing now, IE9, and what they're doing with IE10. And, you know, you see them actually going after legitimate targets, you know, standards compliance and so forth. It's nice. I mean, it's the way it should be.
Well, so they need to do that. You do have to. That's the trick, right? You want competition, but you also want standards. It's a little tricky. And you don't all want to be on WebKit. You'd kind of like to have some other, you know, fortunately, Firefox is Gecko. But Chrome and Safari are WebKit. But IE's not WebKit, is it?
Trident's Redwing engine.
Their own engine. All right. So we've got Trident, Gecko, WebKit, and then there's always Opera.
Is there, though?
Oh, yeah.
Is there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. MDOP. Yeah. Is that how you say it?
Yep.
What?
I know. That sounds
like an enterprise product. Goes right in there with BPOS. What is
it? It is, although I've been pushing Microsoft for years to make this more generally available. Microsoft makes this thing available called MDOP. MDOP is the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. It's a collection of utilities that are available essentially to volume license customers. Although, actually, if you get Windows Intune, you can also license MDOP through that service very cheaply. I think it's $1 per license or something. You know, for those users as well. So the tools are all around deployment and virtualization. And also diagnostics and recovery. So they have like the Dart recovery environment, which is fantastic. Every couple of years, they kind of rev it. It's the applications or utilities that make up the suite are kind of revved on their own schedules. And over the past 2 weeks, they've been talking about new versions of some of the apps, and in one case, a brand new app that will expand the suite into new areas. So the thing I'm really excited about. That's part of this new one is a new app that's called User Experience Virtualization, or UEV, right? So Microsoft has these, one of the other tools that's in MDOP is called Application Virtualization. And it's a way that organizations, you know, corporations can stream or deliver, or deploy, I guess would be the term, virtualized applications to desktops. So in other words, they package it up in the central office and then they deploy it out to the desktops. And it sits there in a virtualized package of its own on your PC. So it's isolated from the rest of the PC. It's centrally controlled. You don't have to worry about it. To the user, it just looks like an app. So it's configured the way the company wants it. And they can turn it on and off, you know, as they need to and so forth as well. So if the employee leaves the company, you know, they'll no longer have access to those apps or whatever. That's a nice capability. But if you move from PC to PC, as people often do, you maybe use a PC at work, one at home, or like even a home computer, or you're on the road and you want to use a kiosk or whatever. You know, one of the The problems is like people expect to have their personal environments kind of go with them. So in addition to the operating system, which can be delivered virtually, and the applications, which can be delivered virtually, both in various ways, there's this concept of user experience virtualization. So in the past, they've had things like folder redirection or offline folders where, you know, I could be sitting on a plane and accessing the network even though I'm offline because those things are cached, you know, on my PC. And that's kind of a that's a nice feature. But they never had a way to virtualize your settings, your customizations, your Windows customizations, your application customizations. And so this new tool adds that capability. It's compatible with Windows 8 as well as Windows 7, as is the new version of application virtualization. And so these things all together provide a very interesting kind of set of capabilities all of a sudden, where you could sit down at a computer, log on with your domain credentials or whatever, automatically have all of your apps delivered, but now also automatically have all of your custom wallpaper and your dictionary settings and whatever custom office settings you made. And so it's kind of like the full meal deal now. You know, you get the whole thing. So if your laptop got stolen and you got a new loaner laptop or a new laptop, or you just come into the office and use a different computer for the first time, whatever it is, this is the final piece of the puzzle, I would say, because they used to talk about this user virtualization stuff, and it was kind of incomplete. But now I think with user experience virtualization, it's a more complete, or arguably complete solution, maybe for the first time. So it's in beta now. Application virtualization 5.0, which is a new version of that, is also in beta. And there's a new version of Dart, which is that diagnostics and recovery toolkit, I think is the name of it. Also in beta, that was announced last week. So these things will come together and form some future new version of MDOP, you know, that will be released maybe this year or next year, that will be, you know, fully Windows 8 compatible.
Can I just, I mean, do I have to use it in an enterprise? Can I just have it for my own personal?
Yeah, most of these actually will work outside of the enterprise. So one of the things I'm going to test, I downloaded this stuff and I was looking through it. They talk a lot about Active Directory, but if I'm reading this correctly, I believe you can deploy user experience virtualization through Windows Intune, which is not enterprise based and not domain based. And I'm gonna test it. I do have a domain setup that I can use, but I'm curious about this stuff for my own kind of use, because if you think about it, I blow away computers all the time and I come back, and it would be kind of neat to be able to turn on a PC for the first time to install Windows. You know, Windows 8 does that now in 8 minutes, and kind of blow all this stuff onto the PC. Yeah. In a centrally managed way. I mean, even just for me, and I think there were a lot of power users like this who would love this capability.
A lot of us use Nynite, which gives you kind of that same.
This is a sort of a managed version of that.
The problem with Nynite is it's a limited number of apps. And
it's online apps. You know, this is this type of stuff. I could make packages for Photoshop, Office.
See, that would be
all
really
that stuff.
Sweet. Yeah.
Very, very interesting. So,
think of it as a Nynite for all your apps, and it's just be a bundle that you would just push a button and phew.
Yeah, and then the user experience virtualization would be something that I don't believe is part of Nynite, where it's not just the apps, it's the custom settings, right? Yeah. So in other words, imagine, obviously, some apps have this stuff. So when you could log into Chrome and it synchronizes settings. But imagine if you could install.
So nice when stuff does that.
Other apps that have that same capability. Right. Yeah.
Very so theoretically, we might get that in Windows 8 across the board, you think?
I think what you're going to. So there are enterprise features and then there are consumer features, right? So it's interesting to see how they kind of bleed across. In Windows 8 natively, they are, when you log on just as a local user or with your Microsoft account, you do get the ability to sync settings across PCs. And it's funny because it works so well, it's almost kind of annoying, you know. So on a tablet, I could set it up with the wallpaper and stuff that I want. And when I go and log into my desktop, that wallpaper is replicated, as are some interesting Explorer settings. So for example, if you put your taskbar on the side of the screen instead of the bottom, that will be replicated across the PCs that you use with Windows 8.
See, that's nice.
Very interesting. Yeah, so those capabilities are related. They're delivered in different ways, obviously, for businesses and consumers. But yeah, I definitely think there's some bleed through, you know, between the two types of users.
Well, we're going that way anyway. I mean, basically, everything, all your settings will be in the cloud. Your apps will be in the cloud. You just, you know, you'll log into any arbitrary computer, and it's your computer suddenly. I mean, I think
it's fantastic.
That's the point of cloud, I would guess.
Yep.
Xbox 360 is making me mad because I bought a PS3 for my new setup my home theater because I wanted the Blu-ray disc. And I wish now, when they announced this Xfinity MLB and HBO Go, it's making the Xbox 360 look like the preeminent set-top box.
There's one thing I would say that keeps the Xbox ahead of the competition, and one key thing that's missing from the Xbox that would just make it a no-brainer. The one thing that's missing is Amazon. We have on the Xbox side Netflix already.
Yeah.
Okay, but the reason you want Amazon is you want an alternative to the Apple ecosystem that where you can buy and rent
movies.
Video content, TV shows and movies.
Yep.
Right?
I agree.
Now, we have that. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a Zune marketplace in there that does that. But, you know, I kind of like to, if I'm going to buy content, and I think most people, anyone who would buy this kind of content, and by the way, I don't think there are many, but if you're going to buy this kind of stuff, you kind of want to do it for a platform that makes sense. It's going to work everywhere. And the problem with the Zune stuff is it works on PCs, of course, and it will work on a select minority of devices, Zune devices and Windows phones and so forth. But actually, it won't work on Windows phones, so never mind about that. So it works on Xboxes, of course. But, you know, that's not really great. And the Amazon thing, I think, has that benefit of being available in more places.
Mm-hmm.
It's not universal. It's not, nothing is. But it's a little bit better. I think that's the one thing that would be nice to have. But the one technical feature that Xbox has that I don't think a lot of people realize or know about is it has this amazing ability to stream 1080p. And what I mean by that is when you start streaming anything, so if you go to HBO Go and you start watching Game of Thrones, or you go to Netflix, well, Netflix probably doesn't offer 1080p, so
it does.
A bad example. It does, okay.
Yeah, everything's
but if you,
going that way.
Anything, anything you have purchased on Zune Marketplace, I as a test, had bought the movie, Hot Tub Time Machine, right?
Sure, just testing things. I understand.
Well, no, I got it because it was new at the time and it was 1080p.
It's actually a great movie.
So now I can stream that at any time from the Xbox. Anytime, you know, you log in with your account, it's just there. It's available for streaming forever.
Yeah.
And what it does is it's kind of an adaptive streaming. So when it first starts streaming, it looks like a YouTube video. And about 3 seconds into it, it clears up a little bit. It's kind of like standard definition, not bad. A little bit better, 720p. But eventually it hits 1080p, and then it's rock solid. And what it's doing is, you know, obviously caching as it downloads the stuff.
Right.
And it will let you play the video from the beginning. And so for the first, you know, 10, 30 seconds, whatever, it's not quite 1080p, but it gives you that near instantaneous start as if the thing were sitting there on your hard drive or on a disk or whatever. And it is an amazing capability, and it works with all of these services that support it. So I know HBO Go is an example of one that does. And I've played it here in my office on the Xbox. Here, I've done it out on my HDTV, where you stand in front of the screen and you're looking for those little blotchy areas in the background. Maybe it's a dark scene or whatever, to see what the quality is. I have to say, obviously Blu-ray is probably the standard at this point for 1920 by 1080, but it's really good. I mean, it's really good. And there's some neat stuff. And I would say this week, you know, they've added Xfinity support and Major League Baseball and HBO Go. And it's getting pretty close, you know, where it's like this is kind of the place to be. And unrelated to this, or maybe related, maybe not coincidentally, but Microsoft also revealed this week that for the first time, Xbox users are spending over half of their time using the console, not playing video games, but doing this other entertainment.
More than half.
Yeah, more than half.
Wow.
The reason that's interesting is that, you know, the Xbox, the point behind it was to serve the hardcore gaming market, right? It wasn't just, not just gamers, but people who were like really into games, you know?
Right.
It brought...
Well, it is the best gaming platform. I mean, period.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But it also sort of legitimized. there's a word I just invented.
I liked it.
It's sort of...
it legitimated.
Yeah. I'm sick, Leo.
I'm sure I shouldn't make you laugh. It legitimated the overall concept.
Well, it the concept of a shooter on a console was semi-ridiculous. I mean, there were some...
Oh, God, now it's the only way to play.
But now, now it is. Not just accepted, it's the way to do it.
Right.
So, but here we are on this console that was kind of aimed originally at the hardcore part of the market. And, you know, there's a lot of kids content and, you know, little, you know.
But this is always what Microsoft wanted. This was going to be their stealth set-top box play.
It lends some credence to the notion that, you know, people have said there's a rumor that for the next Xbox, that there'll be some version of it that's not a video game machine. In other words, you could have a really low-end device that just provided this content.
It's just a Roku or an Apple TV.
Exactly, yeah. Without the video games. And I could see that. I could really see that. In fact, for me personally, I liked having the Xbox on a dedicated screen, and we play video games on that. But, you know, out in the living room, what I really want is that Apple TV / Roku type device, you know, something that's small and silent and, you know, simple remote and just does what it's supposed to do. So, you know, the 360's got a nice UI. In talking, you know, I was goofing around about the music app. I mean, the Metro UIs on the Xbox are just like the one in the music app, actually. I mean, exactly like that. They're very similar. When you go into HBO Go, for example, it's this Metro experience. It's crazy looking. But it works well. It's nice. And it's a nice, that's a nice kind of UI to navigate with a remote as well.
Mm-hmm. It does baffle me that Sony is paying so little attention to this, since they do have some machines out there connected to televisions, I understand.
Yes, they do. Sony, you know, I was talking about this the other day. You know, Sony years ago, I guess when the PS3 first came out, I don't remember what the name of that UI is that debuted on the PSP and then they brought it into the PS3 as well. I always felt like that was a really nice UI for HD TVs.
Mm-hmm. It looks good.
That this was something that could be successful. But they never really did anything around the entertainment stuff. Coincidentally, this week, by the way, they announced that the Amazon services are now available in the PS3. But I would say overall, they're pretty far behind the Xbox with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. What do I have hooked up to my TV? I have an Apple TV. I have, believe it or not, a Google TV. The review, and I have a PS3. So there's three ways I can watch Netflix. There's three ways I can watch Amazon.
I mean, I have Apple TV, Roku, and a
there's
Xbox.
A lot of overlap, isn't there?
We also have a Google TV, but that's separate, and I hate it. We just never use that.
Once they updated it, I've actually kind of fallen for it.
Really?
Well, it's a silly reason, but it doesn't take an HDMI slot.
That's not a silly reason at all. In fact, I think the strategy for Google TV might be to integrate that UI into TVs.
Right.
Just make
that
the default.
It is, actually. Who was it? Was it LG announced at CES, a Google TV?
If every, you know, or if every TV maker offered that as a capability.
Maybe.
Yeah. I think that would be smart.
Well, what's bad is they're all going their own way, and these guys do not know how to design UIs. They don't know how to design apps, and it's just awful. And, you know, we had a Samsung TV with the smart apps, great TV, but every once in a while I'm watching a show and it would pop up a thing saying you need to log into your Facebook account. It's like, no, yeah. I'm watching TV right now, thank you. I mean, and then you got to go to their app store, and it's just an ungainly experience.
It's like the complexity of the PC industry hitting every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, it's all the things you hate about PCs in a TV. Great, just what we need.
Yep.
You did point to this video. This is Walter Isaacson.
Yeah, we can't watch this on the show, but
it's too long to play. But it's worth playing.
No, but listen, if you care about this stuff, a very interesting interview.
He's the Steve Jobs biographer.
Yeah. Now he says something toward the end of this video that I think is very interesting. I think so. Yeah. I'm surprised this hasn't gotten more news.
We covered it when it happened, but you're right; it has not gotten the coverage I thought it deserved.
My takeaway from this is that I don't actually think Apple's making a TV.
Right.
I think what he's saying is, because in the book, remember, he wrote, Steve Jobs had been quoted as saying, we cracked it, right?
Right.
And one of the things he says in the video, the biographer, is, you know, I had a decision
everything.
To make.
Yeah.
Right. I had a decision to make. When I published this book, I could have just screwed Apple and detailed their plans for textbooks and TV. But I didn't, out of respect to the company and Steve Jobs. So he kind of alluded to, he provided the vague quotes.
Right.
And what he said, you know, I think it was in response to an audience question, was, I'm not going to reveal any more information here, obviously. But then he kind of did. And what he alluded to was, or what he said was, that basically that Steve Jobs had gotten the agreements from the industry that they had previously gotten from the music industry, which was to put all of their content into the system. And that that's what he kind of meant by, we cracked it. You know, that this stuff would be available through the Apple TV service cheaply and, you know, using an elegant interface with a simple remote and all that kind of stuff. And as I listened to him talk, I thought to myself, they're not building a TV.
we gave them too much credit. It wasn't
you hear TV and you think, you're building a TV.
Right.
You know,
but they I agree with you.
I think TV is a service.
I've always thought it made no sense to build a TV.
In other words, well, you can plug a, it's a $99 device.
Exactly.
I, by the way, we just talked about Google integrating Google TV into TVs. I mean, integrating Apple TV into TVs would be a much better idea. For everybody. I mean, just
but
for
not it wouldn't be something Apple would do. It'd be but and no, Apple but, does not license to people, so it's not going to happen.
Maybe that would be an amazing
thing. Tim Cook might.
That makes more sense than
much more. Buy Apple a Samsung does. TV with Apple TV built in makes much more sense.
Oh, it'd be incredible.
Yeah.
But even as it is today, it's $99. It's the simplest thing in the world. If I could get TV through that thing,
right. You would cut your cord.
Listen, I think I swear at my set-top box every day. I hate it.
Right.
The Fios this year, first of all, the box itself looks like a relic from the Apollo space program. It is the most horrific piece of machinery on Earth. You know, one of those Motorola
black,
set-top boxes.
Square, ugly.
Yours is
silver.
It's a pizza box.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's awful. Yeah. So.
Well, it's made by a company called Scientific Atlanta. I mean, come on.
It's slowest.
What the hell is that all about?
They just updated the user interface, right, for the software, which is nice looking, but now it's slower than crap. Yeah. Like,
this is the same problem the TV companies. These guys don't know how. First of all, they need to keep prices down so they don't put a processor in there. You know,
no.
Slowest thing they could find.
It has like a Zilog Z80
exactly,
in it, I think. Seriously, like 64K bytes of RAM. You'll never need more than this, sir.
Yeah.
No, so, it is horrific.
And yet you're seeing now in some of these new TVs, you're seeing Intel Core, you know, i5s and stuff. But the set-top boxes are brain dead.
What we need is to get rid of these boxes,
I
right?
agree.
I mean, and integrating them into a TV is one way to do it.
But this
integrating
was,
this it as
was
software Bill, into a computing device is another way to do it.
This was Bill Gates' desire.
Yes.
He wanted to do this. And in fact, didn't Microsoft create a set-top box? I seem to remember
actually, they decided not to go the set-top.
Because the cable company said, in your dreams, because anything that would run Windows or even CE is going to cost way too much. We've got these nice cheap boxes from Scientific Atlanta. We're going to keep using those.
Microsoft had many of these things. So there was Ultimate TV.
Right.
They still actually in the market today have set-top boxes that they sell through AT&T and internationally in Portugal and other countries.
Oh, that's interesting.
Obviously, they have Media Center, which is a PC-based solution, software solution. So Microsoft has tried this many routes.
Never with
Microsoft,
success.
You know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, nobody wanted Microsoft involved because they were the big kahuna in the PC industry and people were afraid of them.
Scared. Yeah.
Today might be a slightly different story. And I'm sure people are afraid of Apple for the same
reasons. Much more afraid. And yet, these companies have so much experience with UI design.
They know.
And they do so much.
Why is
Samsung reinventing the wheel?
If I was Sony, Samsung, LG, whoever makes TVs today, I would hand the keys to the kingdom to them, and I would put that stuff in those TVs.
They will, because at this point, they're doing such a bad job.
Yeah.
I've yet to see a smart TV that I
would love to get rid of my set-top box from Fios. I hate it. I curse it every day.
And the truth is, if you can buy a $99 box, whether it's an Xbox, you know, low-end or an Apple TV or a Roku, plugs into your TV, gives it internet access, gives it all of these nice capabilities with a well-designed UI, what's wrong with that, you know?
Well, okay, so today it doesn't do everything, right? You don't get, first of all, there's a...
Well, it's impossible to choose because some do, everything does something different.
Yeah, no, in other words, the reason we have a cable set-top box actually is because we have children, but whatever. So we have
live TV.
Whatever selection of TV channels we have. We have HBO and all that kind of stuff. Right. I mean, you kind of have to have that.
Right.
But there's a fee associated with this every month.
Right.
And if Apple could do that, where it was basically the same selection of content for roughly the same price, obviously you would be splitting this money between Apple and whoever else your provider, whatever it is.
Well, that's the nice thing, because Apple just wants 30% because they make money on the hardware. So they don't need to be rapacious in their...
Rapacious.
Rapacious. It's a special
legitimatize.
Word. Legitimatize the legitimation.
Apple would legitimatize this
They would legitimatize this. Finally, our favorite topic, patents. We had Jeff Clavier, the venture capitalist, on the Triangulation yesterday. And I asked him, well, you know, how much of a damper on innovation is this patent stuff? And he said, it's
is it?
Yeah. he said it's terrible.
Are we heading toward like patent Armageddon or whatever? I mean,
he says it's got to change. It's got to change. And the thing that he uses as an example is Yahoo falling apart, just dying, and saying, bringing a new CEO, and the guy says, well, we're going to fire 15% of our staff. We're going to shut down all these properties. Our future is suing the hell out of Facebook.
Well, I hope their future is a little bit more than that.
Well, I would hope so, too, but he sure doesn't. You know, the funny thing is Facebook came back a couple of days ago with a countersuit that was.
I believe the countersuit literally said, no.
Yeah, it said, here's the 10 patents that prove that we own the 10 things you don't like. They didn't go any farther, which I admire. They could have countersued with a bunch of other stuff saying, well, and by the way, you're violating our patents. But they didn't.
Facebook doesn't strike me as the
kings
of intellectual property. But I have to imagine at Facebook when Yahoo approached them with this first behind closed doors that they were like, seriously?
Really? You invented social network? Jeez. Well, the truth is if Facebook went out and bought patents as a defense. I mean, some of the patents that they were countersuing with, they'd bought the day before.
Almost all of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they predate Facebook, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Hey, that's how you do it.
That's a strategy.
But that's
better than Google. Google never bought any.
That's the problem with all of this is you spend time and money and energy on something that doesn't help anybody.
It's a hard thing. You know, there are obviously frivolous patents, and I'm sure many of them are frivolous, ludicrous,
right,
general concepts. There are legitimate advances that have occurred that people, you know, they want the credit and the payment for creating something.
If you invented intermittent windshield wipers and GM stole it from you, you have every right to pursue that. That's a, you know, but that's not a software patent.
That's a movie, is what that is. A documentary or whatever.
So as we continue in these mobile patents, I guess the EU is investigating Motorola. Now a Google company.
Soon to be, yeah.
The EU hates Motorola. I mean, hates Google. They hate.
I think the EU hates everything.
They hate everything.
You know? I think the EU would like us all to be one giant collective farm of, you know, freewheeling gift giving or whatever. But yeah, they don't like big companies, that's for sure.
No.
I view that with a sense of amusement.
Socialists.
Their socialism isn't as bad as people think it is, but the form of socialism is what people imagine, I think, when they hear socialism. Yeah. It's
anti-corporate.
It's a little much, yeah.
Yeah, anti-corporate.
Not that I think like corporations should be viewed as people, but I think between these two extremes, right, there's some kind of a logical middle ground or a pragmatic middle ground we could hit on. The EU is absolutely at some extreme when it comes to corporations, yeah.
I'd agree on that. Let's get our Audible pick of the week, and then I will get your pick. And we have a bunch of tips. Since Mary Jo's not here, we're going to replace the enterprise stuff with something you're really interested in. So that'll be fun.
Okay.
No, I'll just tease it. But first, let's go to audible.com/windows, where you can sign up for the Audible Gold account. That's a book a month. But here's a nice thing. Your first book is free. First credit is free. That means you've got a very tough thing to do here. You've got to go to Audible and pick something, one thing for your sample. It's a great thing to do. I mean, I like it that Audible does this because it means you really can find out, do I like audiobooks? Can I listen to audiobooks? Is this going to be something for me? I think you will. But I would say pick wisely because, you pick a good book, you'll get a real sense of what audiobooks can do for you. Fortunately, we have a fella here who, like me, loves audible.com and has a recommendation for you.
Actually, I guess I have two.
All right.
I threw this one in at the request of my wife, if you can believe that. My wife and son both read The Hunger Games by Susan Collins, which, of course, was...
Have you seen the movie yet?
No, I will. I tend not to see movies in the theater, so I'll probably wait. My son was in line on day one. You know, he saw this
movie. I really want to see it, but I kind of want to read the book first.
This is a tough one for me. There are certain books that I just can't wrap my head around for various reasons. So, for example, the Harry Potter books. As much as I like science fiction and fantasy and stuff, I just can't.
No,
there just isn't an original thought there. I try to pay attention.
I completely agree with you. In fact,
can't do it.
The only reason I loved those books is because I could read them to my kids, and that was really great. But they were not great writing, I hate to say it.
Yeah, so I just won't do it.
Yeah.
So there are books like... Game of Thrones is a good example. That whole series of books.
Wonderful.
I sort of resisted those for years because as a sort of an old school Asimov Tolkien fan, I thought, you know, no one is going to do this epic thing right anymore. It's just going to be a copy like Sword of Shannara or something. But actually, those books are amazing.
They stand up.
In fact, they're almost They're almost too detailed.
It's hard to believe that he could create this universe in his head.
Yeah, so actually, that's great. I think in the middle we have something like The Hunger Games. My wife insists that this is actually a very good book. In fact, she's read all three of them and says that this by far is the best of those three. I listen to what it's about, and I hear things that, to me, are reminiscent of, as I wrote in the notes, you know, Ender's Game, Lord of the Flies, Battle Royale. I mean, all kinds of different concepts that have kind of been circling the sci-fi fantasy realm for a long, long time. Right. But it seems like I'll definitely see the movie, and it is kind of one of those young adult fiction type titles, you know, kind of like Jumper, which I had recommended some time ago. But I'm assured that it's very good. My wife, who is intelligent and an adult, so I will throw her that.
many folks have assured me that it is as well.
The other thing I wanted to point out, though, is I had a pick some time ago, probably a couple of years ago, a book called The Tourists by Olin Steinhauer. This is a fantastic, fantastic book. And if you like the John Le Carre type stuff, I would say this is one of the few books. I would say it's one of the few books that kind of approaches that style of thing. I actually did pick this book some time ago, but in the interim, and I have not read these yet, but they've both gotten awesome reviews. He's written two other books in this series with the same main character. The newest one, I believe, that just came out is called An American Spy. And
So there's three in the series. These are the Milo Weaver books.
Three in the series. Yes, exactly. I've only read the first one. But if you like that kind of thing, and I do, the first one, at least, is one of the best books I've ever read. That's a fantastic book.
I'm adding it right now to my cart.
Yeah, obviously you want to start with the first one.
I have two credits, so...
That's a good one. That's a really good one, yeah. So if the young adult fiction thing is not your thing, for that.
The deal with Audible is it will play on everything. God, I really thought, I was told we were going to have in March an Audible client for a Windows phone.
Oh, well, it's should be coming soon.
Any minute now. I mean, it really is close. Maybe there was
I can show
get along.
To you. I don't know.
So you've got the beta.
Yeah, I actually haven't even installed the latest.
The nice thing about having the client is it has your whole library. You can pick any. Oh, look at that. Ooh, it's kind of, you know what? It's more styling than the one on Android. Metro. Oh, look at that. It's very metro. Wow. Okay, worth waiting for. So look, here's the deal. Get Audible. Get the app on your phone, Android, iPhone, and very soon Windows Phone. And your whole library is always available there. You can listen on the phone, but you can listen on lots of other devices. Audible plays everywhere, including your computer. And I'll tell you, there's always times that you cannot read a book, but you could listen. The gym, commuting, carpool. It's a lifesaver for me. I actually put it on the stereo and listen while I'm doing the housework. I just love it. Audible.com/windows. Your first one's free. The Tourist, that sounds good. Hunger Games, if you're going to go see that. I like to read a book before I see the movie. Some great choices.
Well, the other way to do it, though, is if you like a movie and there is a book based, you know, that the movie's based on, oftentimes, you know, go the other way because the book fills in all the details. You know, Game of Thrones is a great example of that. The TV show is very detailed, but there are these interesting details in the show that you're sort of curious, why does that woman have red teeth, or what was that all about? And you read the book, and there's a whole background story for everything. It's rather amazing. So certainly the other direction is also interesting.
I guess it just depends what you know, medium you like the best.
Yep. Can I ask you an Audible support question, if you know the answer?
Certainly.
Obviously, you can buy books through Audible.
Yeah.
And if you have a supported app, they appear automatically, so forth. But you can also buy Audible books through the iTunes store.
Right.
Now, I did that recently.
They're not in your library, though.
And they're not in my library.
No, they're only in your library if you buy them from Audible. The iTunes thing is because Apple supports natively the DRM format for Audible. Mm-hmm. The .aa
so that's literally
file.
Stuck to my Apple account.
Yeah,
that's
I hate to say it. And there's reasons for that. For instance, Apple was able to negotiate an exclusive for, I think it was the Harry Potter books. So you couldn't get them on Audible, but you could have get them on the iBookstore, but it's still an Audible purchase.
The reason I wouldn't normally, I don't even know why I checked, but I assume that I recommended The Gunslinger a few weeks back, a month ago, 2 months ago, whatever. The Gunslinger, that Stephen King story, the first one of the series, was, I mean, significantly less expensive on iTunes. Like, so much so that I was like, well, I'll just get it on iTunes. That's fine.
Right.
Now, of course, I have to listen to it on my iPhone.
Right.
I can't listen to it anywhere else. But
you did see that there's a new Stephen King novel in the Dark Tower series coming.
What?
Ha ha! Yes. I thought, because Audible started talking about this around April Fool's Day, I thought, oh, this is a joke. But no. Dark Tower 7, The Wind Through the Keyhole, is coming April 24th. Isn't that exciting?
Did not know this.
Yes, so save a credit.
This changes everything, Leo.
I know, I'm excited. Have you read all of them?
Yeah.
I'm impressed.
I thought we were done.
Longest damn sequence of books. And, of course, you have to read The Stand and all the other books that are in that universe so that you get the complete picture.
I love, by the way, the crossover stuff in King's story. And it goes between his short stories, novellas, books. I mean, he references there'll be a news story on the TV and one thing about an event that occurred in Castle Rock that was the focus of another book. I mean, I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I love when he does
that. Well, and that's why you have to read every single word Stephen King ever wrote, which could take more than three lifetimes.
I recommend it. I do. I recommend
that. I'm working on it. But anyway, The Stand is next for me. I'm finishing Clash of Kings from the Game of Thrones. I wanted to finish that before this miniseries
began. Is that part two?
That's the one we're watching on TV now.
I'm on the same.
Yeah. And then, but as soon as I'm done with that, this is the problem. I got to start driving places.
Yeah, I know. Going more long trips.
Yeah. Because I just can't listen enough.
You know.
That's great. Isn't it nice, though, that you actually have time you want to read more? I mean, I think that it just brought this whole reading thing back into my life, and I'm just thrilled. Yeah. So let's get a tip of the week.
or several of them.
I like this one.
This is, I swear to God, I get this question every week.
No.
I do. I'm not kidding.
Paul
every
Theron,
week.
And where can I get a Windows sticker for my car?
I foolishly mentioned that I have these Windows logo stickers, which I do.
Because Apple, the reason is Apple does this. Every Apple product you buy comes with Windows stickers.
Right.
To me, it's every a dumb Apple. Thing to drive around a vehicle that announces, I have an expensive computer. It might even be in the car now.
Maybe it's under my seat. You should check.
Why don't you check?
Here's the point in the window you should hit to smash it.
It just seems dumb. I mean, I will not do that. But
I hear you.
On the other hand, it's probably safe to have a Windows sticker in your car.
By the way, this is an amazing bit of synergy here, but I mentioned the Windows for Workgroups resource kit.
Yeah.
Right, the screwdriver. You know what else that thing had in it?
A
Windows logo sticker.
Wow.
Yep. Anyway.
Well, this is the new logo, which is nice.
It's the current it's the current one.
Oh, so it's not the actually, new square one. You're right.
It's the famous one. So this site has these Apple-like logo stickers, and you can get them in different sizes, including some pretty huge ones, and in different colors as well. So I ordered two or three of them. I don't recall. I haven't gotten them yet. But Jake Eisenberg wrote me with this, so thank you for this tip. This will be a site I'll be forwarding to people for the rest of my life, I'm sure. Hopefully they'll come out with a Windows 8 version of the sticker as well.
They also have 58 different bat stickers, just in case.
I think they have,
this is a very strange site. If you want a sticker,
whatever your sticker needs are.
They got it.
Yeah, looks like clip art stickers to me.
Yeah, you know what? That's what they're doing. They're probably cutting vinyl decals on demand.
I've asked Microsoft again and again why they don't make this stuff available. And now that they're starting to have retail stores, you know, they could sell posters and stickers and shirts and stuff. I mean, people love that kind of stuff.
I'm going to get a Centaur sticker because you never know.
I just miss Narnia.
Wouldn't it be funny if I got a thing that said Centaur on board? Anyway, right. I don't know why I thought of that. Tip number two, that site, Decals Planet, is decalsplanet.com. Stop bugging Paul. Tip number two.
So one of the best things about Windows 8 is that you can log on with your Microsoft ID, like throd@hotmail.com or whatever you use. And that's a new way of logging in. And it gives you all of this great integration. It works in many ways. We talked about the synchronization of settings before. A lot of the apps use this automatically. So if you access your mail app, Hotmail Mail is right there automatically. If you access the People app, all of the social network stuff that you integrated through Windows Live is there. If you access the photo app, all of the social networks and photo sharing sites you've integrated through Windows Live are there. It's nice. But the downside to it is that we have these home networks that have these other versions of Windows, Windows Home Server, Windows 7, Windows XP. Those things do not support Microsoft account types. And as you browse around your home network, if you want to do file sharing or whatever, media sharing, you know, these things rely on different sharing mechanisms. And you know, unfortunately, like, you know, the advice in the past was always, well, if you're going to log onto this computer, you log on as Paul and you access whatever password you want. And then you log on to this second computer, make sure you're using the same account. And then when you do, those things are automatic. You know, you can share across them. It's simple. Unfortunately, now that I'm logging in, it's therod@hotmail.com. So it's not when I try to hit that other computer, it throws up this dialogue that says, no, you're going to log in. And even though there's a little checkbox that says, save my credentials or whatever, it never saves your credentials. That's Microsoft's little networking April Fool's joke. So I wrote an article about there are two major ways you can get around this. One is to use home group networking. And the other one is just to configure your system in a certain way so that this will actually work using a kind of a hidden feature called Windows. Actually, it's called Credential Manager now. The old name is Windows Vault. I still think of it as Windows Vault. But it's kind of a power user tip. It's the type of thing that I think a lot of people wouldn't know how to fix off the top of their head. So I have a link in the show notes about how to make that happen. I have an article I published on the website. So you can check that out.
Excellent. But we're not done. No, you might think, hey, that's more tips than any one show could handle. No, my friend. Tip number three.
So Microsoft is going on the road throughout the spring to various cities across the United States, and they're giving an all-day free class about how to program for Windows 8, program Metro-style apps. I actually got locked out of the one that's local, but I heard from the guys that are running the show. I'm going to be able to get in.
Locked out? They heard you were coming, and they... Oh.
No, it sold out. Like, I couldn't... It was full.
Wow.
And I actually heard from those guys. So I'm going to go. So it's at the end of May near Boston.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I have a link to that in the show notes as well, but I have a post about it. So you can check out their website and find out what's close to you and hopefully attend a class on developing Windows 8 Metro-style apps.
Wow, that's interesting. It's sold out. That's actually a very good sign. Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess Boston's full of people.
This is good timing for me, too, because I'm writing this book. I really want to investigate this. I had spent a bunch of time looking at Windows Phone programming, which is awesome. It's very straightforward, very nice. Windows 8's a little different, so I'm curious about that. And it's not something I can focus on right now because I'm writing this book, but I want to turn my attention to that after the major part of the book writing is done. So this is, I think the Boston one is in late May, May 27th.
This does look fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be Reston, Chevy Chase, Orlando, Tampa, Fort Lauderdale, Charlotte, Waltham, Atlanta, Farmington, Malvern, PA. Yeah, that's a good place. Columbus, Detroit, Minneapolis, Dallas, Chicago, Mountain View. Los Angeles, Irvine, and Redmond, and Denver. Boy, I'd love to go to that. That'd be fun. I mean, even just for fun. I guess I shouldn't take a space of somebody who's actually a real developer, but...
Just wearing like a party hat in the back and having a good time.
This is just fun. Woo!
Mr. LaPorte, if I have to speak to you again.
Woo! C sharp! And finally...
Excuse me, will there be any F sharp coverage today? Actually, I think that's what Mary Jo was doing this week.
I came for the app sharp, but I stay for the Metro.
That's right.
Our tip of the week, number four, and I promise the last tip of the week.
Microsoft will periodically make available books about new software releases for free in electronic version. I only found this one in the Kindle edition version, but and I guess in some locales it's actually not quite free. It's 99 cents or $2.99 or something like that. But introducing Microsoft SQL Server 2012. Is available on the Kindle right now for free, or at least it was last time I checked. And, you know, they did this for Windows Server 2008 when that release came out. This is not a pamphlet either. This is like a 200 and some odd page book. It's a legitimate, you know, Microsoft Press title. So if you use Kindle and want to read about Microsoft SQL Server, which just was released, this is a nice, inexpensive way to do so.
And who wouldn't?
Right.
I mean, after
so
all.
So there's your little bit of enterprise right at the end.
Yeah, you see, that's good. You snuck that in. Nicely done.
But seriously, the sticker thing. Sitting on that all week.
That's what we're here for.
Because I'm not kidding. I get this request all the time.
No, it's funny that Microsoft doesn't do that since Apple really does this. I mean, it's a big deal. And you see Apple stickers everywhere.
Microsoft could include a sticker in every box of Windows, and I swear to God, their sales would go up 20%.
Yeah. Why don't they do that?
I don't know. Because they don't get marketing, Leo.
They don't. Puzzling.
Because our business users wouldn't like the waste.
Yes. decals. What are those? Paul Thurrott, what is an automobile anyway? Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Win Supersite, Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. He's also a news analyst for Penton Media. He is also, most importantly, news editor for Windows IT Pro. And even more importantly, he's the author of the Delphi 6 Super Bible.
Three.
I got it right there. See, I should have known. Delphi 3 Super Bible. And Windows Phone Secrets and soon to be Windows 8 Secrets. How far down the road are you on that?
So we're in kind of a sticky spot right now. I have a writing problem that is opposite of what most people have when you consider a writing problem, which is that I write too much. So at the point where we had turned in 33% of the book, I had completed 50% of the space that is allotted for the book. And one of the things we don't want to do with this version of the book is create yet another 1,000-page behemoth that will kill you if you fall asleep while you're reading it. We're trying to keep it below 650 pages maximum. And I'm already on track, you know, that it's going to be a lot bigger than that. So we might have to, I might actually have to drop some stuff. It's kind of a weird problem. Like I write too much. I think that's the only way to say it. So 50% done. It's weird. So I'm going to do what I can do to.
I write too much. I write too much. And here it is, ladies and gentlemen. We're very excited. As long as we're talking, Paul, I just like to make the announcement. The Butter and Eggs Day Parade is coming to town. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so excited. Wow. And just so if you'd like to come out, Sunday, April 29th.
I just want to be clear about what I'm looking at, because it says River of Dreams. I don't know. Is that a river of milk?
It's a milky river of dreams with some eggs on the side in case you want to make an omelet. Because butter and eggs are no longer the principal products of Petaluma.
Podcasts and radio shows.
And wine day was taken.
Does the feed bank in Petaluma actually function as a feed bank?
We have a number of. In fact, the next time you come out here, I'll take you on a tour of the feed mills, the silage. If you're into silage, there's no better place than Petaluma. And if you come, you know what's nice, if you come in
I don't
even
know how to respond to that.
In the spring and the fall, you really ought to come out for fertilizer days, where the entire town smells like cow poop for like a week. It is great.
Wow.
Yes, it's fertilizer days in Petaluma. Am I wrong? No, that's life in an agrarian.
Yeah, we had friends who used to live behind a slaughterhouse, so I kind of appreciate
that's the worst.
Yeah.
No, actually, the worst in a slaughterhouse, and I don't know if they did it there, is a rendering plant.
Yes.
That's probably the stinkiest thing I've ever smelled. Worse
I'm
than
looking
a chicken
for some
farm.
Liquid. I would like some liquid that used to be an animal.
Worse than a paper mill.
Do you have such a thing?
Worse than a tire factory. It's the rendering plant. You don't want to be there. I worked at a radio station for one day that was hosted next door to a rendering plant. And I said, that's it. I'm never working there again. Bye.
Nice.
All right, my friend, Paul Thurrott, editor-in-chief, the Supersite for Windows. It has been a slice. We will have Mary Jo back, I'm sorry to say, next week.
Hopefully my coughing attacks will be done.
I'll just have to put on pants for the next one. Thank you, Paulie.
Sorry.
We do this show Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. But, you know, you don't have to watch live. It's nice if you do. Because then, you know, you get all the fun and mirth and merriment that we edit out later. But also, but also, if you miss it, you can get the download, audio and video.
By the way,
available.
That's how my son talks all the time now.
Like that?
Yeah. Like, will your damn voice just change? Why don't you just be quiet until you talk
Dad?
To
him? What is he, 11, 12?
He's like 13.
Oh, yeah, 13's the big year. Yeah, for talking like this. Oh, thank you, Paul.
You do not sound like a sissy.
Hey. My voice is changing. Everyone's I talk like this.
And then all of a sudden, the beast from beyond appears.
Come back when you talk like Pantera.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.